At present, there are over 701 email messages in my personal email inbox. Can anybody beat that? Raise your hand if you have more than 700 emails. Yeah, a number you can. The rest of you just aren't being honest. And actually, that's not true. I know people who are really good about, as soon as they get a message, they check it, read it, decide whether they're going to keep it, at which point they put it into a subfolder in their inbox, right? Or they trash it, right? And for them, that is the way they feel like they can stay on top of it. I have never been so good at that, have I, Sarah? But about once a year, typically in the summer, I do a major purge. So I go through and I prioritize all my inbox messages by alphabetized by sender, because it's easier for me than going by date. And then I'm able to like take out chunks of stuff that's from like Groupon and I don't know, all these people I get on their mail list, and I just feel so good after that experience. I feel like I've had a digital detox, and it just feels amazing. I know some of you can identify with this. And then I think to myself, why didn't I just do this all the way along? It feels so good. It feels so good to be caught up. Well, I sometimes long for the day, perhaps you do too, when we didn't have email. Does everybody remember those days? There's ones in this room who don't. They're called digital natives, and they don't remember a time when there wasn't email or other forms of communication that were digital. But you remember when people actually had to call you, right? Or send you a snail mail letter? You remember this? Yeah, right? It wasn't that long ago. And you could always feel caught unless you avoided the message they left for you and said, I'll call them back later. You never did. I never did that. Never did that.
Never.
Well, those days we longed for, those days where everything felt like we could touch it and we could respond to it, and it wasn't coming at us so fast or such a volume that it was hard to feel connected with what we were doing all the time. Many of you may feel like that in your work lives, responding to email all the time. Sometimes it can feel like your whole day is consumed with responding to email. You think to yourself, what did I do with my job before there was email? Because I'm doing this all day long. I like to call it virtual work, right? You feel like you're getting something done as you check your email, and those unread messages are getting dwindled down, and pretty soon you're like, yes, I think I've responded to everything I need to today. Makes us sometimes feel like we're perhaps working for Google or Apple or whatever when we're having to stay connected all the time. As many of you probably know, we are engaging this summer in a sermon series, The Liturgy of the Ordinary, it's in your bulletin, based on a book by the same title by Tish Harrison Warren. And in her book, she's examining how our daily lives are to be informed and shaped by our Sunday worship experience. Today's title is Blessing and Sending, or as I call it, Blessed and Sent. Today's topic corresponds to that timely end of worship often when we send you out or send one another out with a blessing and a charge into the world to bear Christ's good news. The term for liturgy, which is in your bulletin, that's the formal word for it, literally means the work of the word. The work of the word. And it actually also means the work of the people, not just the preacher or the lay reader or anyone else. It's the common work of the people. And so there's a reminder in our passage today from Colossians, the 17th verse. Whatever you do, you know this passage so well, right? You hear it at weddings, you hear it a lot of times as benediction, charges. Whatever you do, in word or in deed, in word or in deed. And interestingly enough, the word deed is actually in the Greek for the same word as work. Isn't that interesting? Because when I think of deed in the church setting, I think of a churchy word. Doing good deeds means going and doing something for someone in need or volunteering your time. It's something think about in terms of this text is the word Christian vocation. Vocation. When we think of vocation, that feels like it connects, right? When we say our vocation, what's your vocation? You know, there's voc tech school. Vocation is from another ancient language, this time Latin, from the word meaning voice. Vocare. Vocare is the word. And so it becomes then this idea that this particular text in Colossians can also be thought as the calling, the vocare, the vocation of the Christian. So I was doing some digging on that, and I consulted one of my former professors, and he wrote this in a textbook about theology. He wrote this: the vocation of a Christian is not to be confused with having a job by which one earns one's livelihood. And I was thinking, oh no. Whatever one's job or profession, Christians have a calling. See, right there we start sensing this division between what we do to earn money and what we do to live out the Christian life. They are called to be partners in God's mission in the world. God's mission in the world. Oh yeah, that's where I do those good deeds, right? This seems lofty. But Tish Harrison, our author, puts it this way. She says that often we as Christians divide our lives into the sacred and the secular. She says that it's not spiritual work like evangelism, prayer, or gathered worship that are the real or important duties, while daily work is inferior. But she also says it's not exclusively in the nitty-gritty of the workaday world with Sunday worship as just an add-on. She points out the two must be held in a formational tension. Sunday worship prepares us to take our faith into our daily life, into our work, into our relationships, into our home life. Our daily work is the testing ground for how we are being transformed by the worship we gather together to do on Sunday. In our tradition, we've been helped along in this regard. The Protestant movement during the Reformation had a lot of conflict about doctrines. But there was one thing they could all agree on. They said all work is holy work. This doesn't sound to us too radical, but at the time it was, because it was toppling this ecclesiastical hierarchy that the Catholic Church had established, that priests and monks and nuns had reached the pinnacle of society. They were at the top, everyone else was below them. And the Protestants, the Reformers, took that and said, that's not true. We're all on the same plane. One of our national publications, the Presbyterian Outlook, recently had on their cover the priesthood of all believers. That was the idea that emerged. All our work is common in this to be holy work, infused by God's Spirit. Harrison wrote this. She said, the Reformers taught us that a farmer may worship God by being a good farmer, and that a parent changing diapers could be as near to Jesus as the Pope. This, as I said, was a scandal. Martin Luther once said, God himself will milk the cows through him whose vocation it is. That sounds grand, doesn't it? And Harrison points out that in that day, of course, now we look back and we can romanticize that. People that feel connected with the soil. People who are tending God's creatures, animals, directly. And sometimes I think it's hard for us to relate to the virtual work we feel like we do with even those professions back then. Timothy Keller, another author, points out the conflicting messages we receive on how to be a Christian in our daily vocation. He throws up some possibilities, and I think probably all of you can relate to this. Is it about being honest? It evangelizing your coworkers, doing sacrificial work, like being a social worker? Is it about just doing the best job you can? Or creating beauty? Or having a grateful, joyful, gospel-changed heart? Or making as much money as you possibly can so you can give it away? Keller points out that as Christians, we can receive confusing messages on just how we are blessed and sent into the daily lives. And so the temptation can be to stop thinking about it all and just go forward, not thinking about how we bring together the Christian calling with our daily work. The church's trajectory in the past few decades has been greater toward a greater integration of the good news of Jesus Christ and social justice. The upside is that more churches are coming to realize that Jesus came to show us how to make an impact in the here and now, and not just to save souls for heaven. Well, the downside to that is that for some, it can seem as though unless you have a job or volunteer in a way that directly influences justice, you somehow are choosing an inferior path. Such sentiments float around. If you really cared for fair labor and people's living conditions or the environment, you would work only for those organizations that make that part of their core identity. But the author says this: the Christian faith teaches us that all work that is not immoral or unethical is part of God's kingdom mission. But this can be challenging as well. At our recent national gathering of our denomination, the General Assembly, there were protests about the use and the investment in fossil fuel companies. Well, I happen to be married to someone whose father worked in that industry. And so you can see for me, in our house, that's a tension as well. One of our tendencies, I think, in this struggle is to depersonalize our vocation by focusing on what type of organizations we're working for or supporting through our giving or supporting through our spending. What are they doing to engage in ethical and socially and environmentally responsible practices? That can be an easy cop-out. Instead, I think we should begin by examining how our individual work serves to promote the gospel. Harrison continues, the kingdom vision, our identity as those blessed and sent, must work itself out in the small routines of our daily work and vocation. As we go to meetings, or we check our email, or we make our children dinner, or we mow the lawn. As Christians, I think we must never say that any of our work is inconsequential when it touches the lives of others. Whether we're conducting major business dealings, or helping our children with chores, we are always on assignment on God's mission. We join up when we are clothed with Christ once in our baptism. We vow that it is Him who will wear when we confirm our faith, often as adolescents. We don't don Him when we walk in these doors on a Sunday morning and then remove Him as we leave. He stays on us, for our mission never ends. Eugene Peterson, a Presbyterian pastor and author, coined the term vocational holiness. Vocational holiness. He argued that we are not made holy outside of our daily work, but rather made holy through it. We don't inject God into our work. We join God in what God is already doing in our work, in our daily lives, in the lives of the people around us. God is lived out in my work when I show compassion to someone who comes to me in need, when I practice patience toward my children, when I show humility toward those who criticize me.
When I look at my vocation, my work, as a blessing,
then I come to see more clearly how I am sent out to be a blessing to others. But I'll admit to you, it's challenging, especially with the increasingly depersonalized technology world we live in. So perhaps the best we can do is realize that the real people, made in God's image, bearing God's life in them, sit at the other end of that email. It may be that our being sent to them becomes cyber, but yet affects them, blesses them, nonetheless. When I began as your pastor nearly 5 years ago, I received an email early on, first week, from Rocky Leahy, one of the former pastors of this church. He sent me an email congratulating me on being called as your pastor, and he gave me a blessing for my ministry. Nearly 5 years later, this still impacts me, and I often reflect on that email that Rocky sent. Being blessed and sent in our modern technological era also means having the wisdom to let things lie. The implied message we received is if we really care, we respond to such and such organization or plea for personal assistance or opportunity to volunteer. You and I are no less holy if we don't respond to every email immediately. We are blessed by the same Jesus who gives us work to do, but also gives us rest. Who blesses us not so we can be perfect in everything, but rather so we can grow in peace. Wholeness, as Sarah shared last week, that comes from remembering that we are sent into the world incomplete, and yet when we encounter the others, together as one body, as Colossians says, we reach for completion. God alone is holy, and we are to learn every day how to allow God's holiness to live in us. This is what Harrison calls the third way. This third way avoids the frenzied workaholism that arises from our attempts to earn our own blessedness and steer our own destiny. Yet it also doesn't abandon our daily tasks, nor does it devalue them as less holy. Living a third way of work, where we seek vocational holiness in and through our work, even as we resist the idolatry of work and accomplishment, allows us to live with work as a form of prayer. How have you thought of that? Have you thought of your work as prayer? My work is pretty easy to do. It kind of comes with the territory. But it's a hard discipline for us who aren't called into vocational ministry. I have heard jobs call things, many things, necessary evil, a means to an end, the daily grind. Rarely do I hear people say, I love my job. But what might happen if we all envision our work, no matter if you love it or you can barely stand it, as part of the blessing from God to be used well? To instead of seeing it as the daily grind, we instead see every day as an assignment from God on God's mission to the world. How might checking your email or attending meetings with coworkers or clients, how might these be different for you and I, if we saw each as an encounter that God has designed to send a blessing? In work, I want to expand this here. As I mentioned, alluded to earlier, parenthood is work. Parents know. It's not just about employment. Your work may be a stay-at-home parent, or a spouse, or a retiree. There is work for all of us to do, whether it's to earn an income, or to manage a home, or to maintain your health. You will always have to work with people. And so you will have the opportunity to embody Christ to them
sermon, the 17th verse of Colossians, is often used as a charge. We use it when people join the church or are being sent on a mission. And as I said, the word is actually can mean work. And so think about that maybe next time you hear that benediction. In all things, in word and works, we are to do them in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God through Him. That is to be our daily mission statements. That defines all the work we do. All of it done, not grudgingly or with bitterness, but with thanksgiving. That's how we're to be sent. That's how we're to show God's love to this world. God has intended us to be blessed, made it so through Jesus Christ, sent us to be a blessing to others. So today, you're challenged to think about that. No matter what your work, no matter how much time you spend sorting email or snail mail, remember all your words and work are blessed by God, are sent to others through God. Take opportunities that you have in your work day to remind someone else.